Hi everybody, this is Bill Ward with another audio diary. Today's date is the 12th of December. It's still in the year 05. Getting ready for Christmas, I guess, and I'll come back to that in a little while. I just wanted to check in with you and hope everybody listening today is in good health and spirits. And I wanted to go back and just talk a little bit about the UK Hall of Fame adventure. Which was fantastic, which I thoroughly enjoyed myself. Some of the events leading up to it, which had nothing at all to do with the Hall of Fame, however, I wanted to go over with you, and maybe some of you might get a good laugh out of it. Anyway, I flew from my relatively safe home here on the beach, a nice sunny day. We flew out on the November the 10th. And we flew overnight, and it was a real rush to get out, to get seating on the flights. And we were actually lucky to get seats on the flights. Most of the flights were booked solid going to London. Anyway, we did find two seats, and I had the most horrible night's sleep, not because of the flights or anything. I love flying, and the flights are usually great. It was just the seats. They were not very good, and so it was a bit of a rough time, kind of sitting up all night and kind of trying to sleep, with one's head to one side and trying to move your legs into a position where you can actually sleep for 30 minutes. And so going through all that, the night flight and the trying to get a comfortable seating position was an adventure. Anyway, we arrived safely in London on November the 11th, which was Armistice Day, and it was felt really nice actually to be in London at that time. The reason why I'm saying that is because the year before, back in 2004, I wanted to go over there just before Armistice Day and be with my brother James, and we were hoping to go down to London and be there on November the 11th and spend just a couple of days in London. And that was back in 2004. That fell through. We never got a chance to do that. So it was nice in 2005 to at least be in London on November the 11th. I like the ceremony that they have on the Sunday, which is the 13th, where they they lay wreaths down at the epitaph down there and by Parliament Square. And I definitely like all that, and coming from a family that's was everybody was in the army or the air force. We were brought up as kids in a very patriotic way, where we'd have to do 2 minutes of silence on November the 11th at 11 a.m. In remembrance of the big guns that stopped firing in Europe in 1918. And so that was kind of drummed into us when we were kids. It wasn't drummed into us; it was something that we participated in, and because we obviously, like a lot of other people, lost families in when we were, before we were born. They were all lost in World War II. So anyway, going on, our driver was there when we got out of customs. Our bags were, of course, the last bags off the flight. Can you believe that? And we were there with the only people. I went over there with my assistant Walter, and me and Walt were just standing in the customs hall. There was nobody else in there waiting for our bags, and they eventually arrived. And we got in the car, and then the first port of call was Blackpool. So we arrived about 3:30 in the afternoon, 4 o'clock. We actually cleared the customs hall about 4:15, I think. And then made a mad dash. If you can make a mad dash through London on a Friday at that time, we made a mad dash to get onto the freeways of motorways and head up to Blackpool. Why Blackpool? Well, that's where a majority of my family lived these days. And a few weeks ago, a baby girl was born. Was a member of our family, and I wanted to make sure that I saw her definitely before, I can't just come to England and not see my, the new baby girl. So off to Blackpool we went. One of the things, I'd written a few things in my audio diary, but I feel like I'm a little bit on the clock right now because I've only got about 15 minutes to bore you to death. No. So there were some things that I wanted to mention, but one of them was being having diabetes number two, which I've had for some time now, which I don't think a lot of people know, but well, some people know. During jet lag, one of the things that you have to watch out for is making sure that you maintain your sugar drops and things like that, especially during jet lag. And it's amazing, actually, how those kind of things can affect when you are flying long distance and you've, got 2 or 3 days of jet lag to get through, and you got to make sure you've got food with you and to keep the sugar normal at all times. So I thought I'd mention that because I know there's probably a lot of other people out there, who have type 2, just like I do, and I've had now for a number of years, since the heart attack, actually. Things started to go different in my life. Certainly not, I don't regard it as a sickness or illness I'm not certainly not a victim of it. It's something that's definitely overcomable and controllable, and something that I don't have to fall victim to. But it's just something that I wanted to mention to anybody else out there who might have type 2 diabetes, that when flying, it is important to maintain the sugar levels. I carry a lot of snacks with me, and I took over a lot of health food stuff. So when we landed, I'm like, I've got all my organic stuff with me and all kinds of vegan stuff. And so in the car on the way up to Blackpool, I'm feeding my face and making sure I've got all my energy and all my stuff to maintain my sugar levels and to keep in good shape, On the way to Blackpool, keep in mind that Walter and I had walked out of the customs hall and the baggage hall. There was nobody around. We just walked straight through and we met our driver. So the driver was the only person that I'd met in England upon arrival from America. And we got in the car and we drove and we drove and we drove. And I did start to feel hungry. I was having a sugar drop, and so I thought, let's stop in at one of the services on the road there. And there's not really anything for people that are vegan at these services. I wish, maybe there could be more in the way of services on the road that were vegan friendly. But I guess in the future that will happen in the future. But anyway, let me see. Let me see. Where am I? I'm taking my time on this, aren't I? Well, I'll see if I can get a little bit more in before it's time to finish. So anyway, we ended up in a services station, and much to my surprise, they had a sign up, a big sign, up on the wall. And again, all I'd spoken to was the limo driver and Walter. Until we got to the service station, and I walked in, and on the wall it had beans on toast. And I thought, okay, scrap the butter, and I'll just have beans on toast, dry toast. So I asked the guy if I could have some beans on toast. And what turned out to be nearly World War III. God, that's you just gotta love England. Anyway, the woman who was in the kitchen looked through this kind of like this little like galleyway, I guess, or this little cutout thing in the wall, looked at me, and she looked at me as if she wanted to kill me. She walked out with a ladle in her hand, and she pointed to the Beans on Toast sign, and in the smallest of letters, it had "For Kids Only." And I just couldn't believe it. I just was like, "Oh my God!" And I was starving, and it was the only thing that was edible in the entire place for a vegan. And I said, "Is there any possibility of making an adult version of that particular dish?" And at that, she went into a native language, which I'm not sure what it is. And it's ain't about being prejudiced, guys, or being racist or anything else. She just went into a native language. And I think she was probably calling me a lot of vulgar names at that point. And of course, I was in line and the line had stopped. And I had a multitude of people standing behind me at this point, being extremely British in basically not wanting to interfere, watching the passing parade, and being very non-vocal about everything, just waiting to see what might eventualize from this given situation. I think the manager came in after a while, and I just said, "All I'm trying to do is get some beans on toast, thank you." And I had to, I felt like I had to get to acquire these beans on toast. I felt like I had to go through the entire gamut of almost being like I had to feel like I had to go run through fire or something. The bread was slammed down so that the chef could show how unappreciative she was of having to make an adult-sized portion of beans on toast. Bread was slammed down, and this is a services centre. I couldn't help thinking, my God, if like visitors for the first time came to England and this was the first place they stopped for service, and this was the service, this was the quality of the service, and I'm just like, my God, So I don't know, maybe people in service stations can maybe think for a second that they do represent a part of Great Britain. And maybe they can think, maybe these people may be visitors, or maybe they just arrived from somewhere, and at least have something like a polite hello. At least most of the service stations do. I couldn't help thinking how incredibly insane it was just to acquire some beans on toast. And she slammed the pots and the pans in the back, and she just absolutely made the point that she was extremely unhappy with having to not go with the flow. This was a menu for children. Beans on toast was for children and not for adults. And thank God it wasn't an emergency, like a fire or something in the building, or where one would have to adjust rapidly to such an emergency. I sometimes wonder, when someone kind of pushes the edge, or changes the system slightly, how people just come unglued. It's just like, it's really scary to me how people could come unglued. So anyway, just for the sake of it, if there are any other poor bastards heading northbound on the northbound side of, you know what? I didn't get the motorway, but it's by Warwick. It's the Welcome Break, Warwick, northbound side. Watch out, vegans, if you're going to order beans on toast, because you could run into this lady again. And I think she won my rudest person in Britain, first person I had contact with, and she was by far the rudest person in Britain that I met on the entire journey, going to. Through from the 11th until I flew home on the 17th of November. She wins the award for that. I also wanted to say a special thank you to the person on British Airways who designed the seat, and I forget what where we were flying in now. I think it was, I don't know, world class or something, or something like that. Because they had managed to design a seat where the audio visual button was connected very close to where the thigh or the ass is. So every time that I moved my thigh or the top of my leg or moved my bottom into the left or the right, I was able to manually switch on the panel, the side panel, which lit up all the audio and visual. And that kept happening constantly over and over again. The only thing I'd like to say to the designer of that particular chair or seat is, come fly with me. And, like come and fly about 10,000 miles with that thing going on. Maybe they can redesign that at some point. Just having a little jab right now. Must say, however, as usual, that the vegan food on the flight was extremely good, and it usually is. It usually is when flying long distance. Most of the carriers, BA, Virgin, Continental, a lot, I'm just forgetting right now, but a lot of people that we travel with, they always end up, the vegan food is usually very, very good. Oh, you know what? I don't have any more time left. I'm out of time, and I haven't talked to you about my shower at the hotel in Blackpool. The no heating, the gale force winds. Maybe I can do that in another audio diary another time. I'm going to wind up. I'm going to stay with the 15 minutes or close to 15 minutes to do this today. Instead, what I'm going to focus on is letting you know that we had a blast. I had a blast over there. It was great to see and meet so many great artists at the Hall of Fame in the UK. Above all, one of the things that I loved the most about it is there was no razzmatazz. Everybody seemed so laid back and so polite, and there was no razzmatazz. There were no bodyguards. There was no somebody trying to grab all the show and that kind of deal, that rock star bullshit. It was just really nice. There was all these incredibly well-known musicians who have done incredible things in music, and they were all just laid back and just taking things in their stride without pomp or circumstance. It was just absolutely admirable to be a part of that and to see that in action. There was some real humility there, I felt, and I thought it was just absolutely fantastic. Well done, the Hall of Fame in the UK. I'm just glad that we were able to perform there. We did Paranoid, and Ozzy, of course, was inducted as well into the British UK Hall of Fame, as well as Black Sabbath. So it was like a, a really neat evening seeing Oz get inducted also. And speaking of Oz, he had a birthday December 3rd. Happy birthday, Oz. My best wishes to you. Let me see. It's Christmas time. To be honest with you, it doesn't feel like Christmas much at our house, not because of the people that are in it. It's just that there's so many things that are so huge right now. They seem to be, and I'm talking about, the crises that are going on in the world right now, and the incredible amount of blows that the United States has taken this year, either through war or disasters, or just so many different things. The Christmas seems so, I don't know. Christmas seems to me right now a long way off. It seems like it's minuscule in comparison to these almost dominating, almost shadow-like monsters that seem to be ruling the world right now. And it's almost like I feel like Christmas is as kind of as run under the carpet somewhere. It's hiding out, so it's hard to feel joy to the world or goodwill towards all men when or even though I mean I try for myself, I try to Each person that I meet, I try to, wish them well. But I think it's sometimes hard to indulge in opulence and without feeling, hey, there's people here that have just got absolutely nothing, nothing at all, no food, no homes. There's wars. I think it's so stressful, Christmas. It costs a lot of money. A lot of people can't afford Christmas. It just seems like there's so much heartbreak already. I'm just having a tough time right now this Christmas. Being able to honestly sit down and with a true heart say, well, isn't it wonderful? Because it's not wonderful. Personally, I'm grateful for the things that I have in my life. I'm grateful that I have a family. I'm grateful that I have a family right now in relatively good health, even though we do have some family members right now who are not in good health at all. In fact, they're in extremely poor health. But so we're like a lot of other people in the world. I'm not saying that we're different or anything else. So I'm grateful for what I have, but I think I'm just gonna try and be of as much use as I can to my fellow man throughout the holidays, which is what I try to do anyway. And if I can accomplish that, then I'll feel okay. But I don't know. Don't see a lot to celebrate this year. I'm glad that I can get some presents for my kids and things like that. This was what is normal around Christmas time, but to be honest with you, I'm a bit sick with the ho 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 when all I see on TV is poverty every single day and hardship that other people are suffering. And even with my own friends who right now are having difficult times and going through life on life's terms, as we call it in certain private parts of my lifestyle. Life on life terms. Anyway, I wish everybody a safe holiday. If you're gonna have a holiday, I hope that it's safe for you. If you're gonna be getting loaded or you're gonna be drinking, then please get a designated driver. I've been in over 29 crashes myself personally, and every single one, not every single one of them, sorry. I'll say that at least 20 of them were because of drinking and drugging, and I've got pulled out of a few with the jaws of life. So, speaking first-hand experience to you, I would say that I'm a real lucky guy to be alive. And but of course, trying to convince a 20-year-old to stay safe and don't drink. Because at 20, I mean, we think we got the world by the balls, and we think we're completely vulnerable, invulnerable. I used to think like that. I used to go, no, that's not going to happen to me. It'll happen to Johnny down the street, but it won't happen to me. My point is, get a fucking designated driver and save your life. Stay strong, and this is the season to commit suicide, as many of us know. And it's the season to go into debt. So always keep in mind, guys, that suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. I know you probably heard cliches like that. That cliche makes a lot of sense to me. I first heard it over 25 years ago. But I just hope that if you are in the dark, that you will be able to reach out to other people around you and be able to say, I need help. So, and for those of you who are in debt, I hope you'll be able to find positive solutions in your life to overcome the debt. I don't know what else to say. I think I said stay strong already, so stay strong, guys. And hopefully we will speak to you again in 06. Okay, take care. Place your head upon whatever you've been chosen to call bed. This is Bill Ward saying, God bless, and speak to you soon. Bye.